I just realised that's the most obvious thing I could possibly say.
Pretty obvious, they've had a bloody good week. Yeah.
If they win two games, they've had a good week. A 1-1 draw with Brighton means it's three without a win for Steve Clarke's Reading. Has the time come to reevaluate our promotion aspirations? Or is there more to our recent form than the results suggest? We'll get the thoughts of our crack panel on tonight's 73rd instalment of the longest weekly-ish running podcast in Tyler's Den history. The Tyler's Den Podcast. Hello and welcome. Thank you very much for hitting that download button once again. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersden.com, and I'm joined this week by Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Hello all.
And Mr. Dave Handbags Harris, our own Incredible Hulk.
Good evening.
You smashing things tonight?
Definitely not.
No.
Have I missed something again? Why are you calling an Incredible Hulk?
One of our illustrious listeners.
Oh yeah,
a notable art critic, I believe.
He is for the Guardian, or was for the Guardian at least.
I'll let you pronounce his name.
Valdemar Janáček.
Very nice.
He questioned a few weeks ago on Twitter what we all look like, and there's pictures of you online, pictures of me and Johnny and stuff. But there's no evidence of Dave online.
How close were they?
Well, Dave said he pictured the Incredible Hulk.
Oh really?
I'm not entirely sure how.
I suppose he's drawing off your personality rather than what you actually look like, because it doesn't.
Well, you are green and 10 foot tall.
Well, yeah, and apparently I sound like Sean Dyche.
Like it.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's all right.
Apparently.
Take it.
I'm going to have to look at these pictures. I didn't know anything about this. This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, so there you go. So our own Incredible Hulk is in the studio, fitting just a couple of days after Halloween. Westy, I couldn't go amiss without asking you. You teased us with what was going to happen at Halloween on last week's show. How many houses did you hit?
Oh, well, in the end, I was quite late in for football, so I think we only done about 3 or 4.
Did you get the good stuff, though?
We got the good stuff, yeah.
You got the good stuff.
We went to the rich areas, like I said.
Dave, you out of the nippers?
We certainly were straight after I got in, yep. We went around most of our estate, and kids are all sugared and e-numbered up now.
Did you
go as the Incredible Hulk?
I am the Incredible Hulk, I don't need to go.
Exactly, well, no wonder you got so many sweets out of it.
You got to play that tune at the end there. the old Incredible Hulk tune where he used to be walking
down the road.
That's it, yeah.
That's what we play at the end of the season.
You got to find that.
As we go into the sunset. But anyway, let's get on with this. Reading 1, Brighton 1, it's coming up just after this.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Okay then, so gents, we drew 1-1 this past weekend with the league leaders Brighton at the Middlesex Stadium. A game that was looking like going to be a keen top two contest a few weeks ago, but unfortunately results at Craven Cottage and the New York Stadium derailed that. But it was still a top of the table clash. Reading coming away with a point. I wasn't there for this one, so I'm going to rely heavily on you two gents for the analysis on this one. But from what I've seen in the highlights and the reports I've read up on thetylersden.com and elsewhere, it sounds like a point was the least Reading deserved. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. It was a bit of a missed opportunity, to be honest with you. There was a load of defensive work put in by Brighton. You can see why they're top of the table based on their defensive organisation. Wasn't a huge amount going forward from them. I think that's fairly endemic of the way they play, given that they haven't actually won any of their games by more than one goal. So it wasn't really too much in the way of a surprise as to the way they set up. But given the chances that we created, I mean, Nick Blackman's had 3 or 4, or certainly 2 very, very good chances to put one away. Mate Vidra as well had one in the breakaway in the second half at 1-0 down. I think generally on chances created, nobody could argue if we'd have gone on to win the game, we should have deserved it.
Yeah, Westy, looking at the stats here, Reading had 21 shots to Brighton's 10. They had 55% of the possession. They had nearly 3 times as many dribbles. They only conceded 3 fouls as well, so they were a pretty clean side on the day. Did the stats reflect the dominance of Reading in the game?
Yeah, I thought the stats did. Well, again, I thought, especially the first half, I thought Brighton started relatively well, but we had a better chances in the first half. But I would say from it, the only thing I noticed on Saturday was with Reading, and I've said it before, is they had a lot of shots, but a lot of them from outside the box. And when we had opportunities to cross it, there was not enough players busting the gut to get in the box. And you see them stood out on the edge of the box. The amount of times the ball's come in, there's probably 5, 6, 7 Brighton defenders, 1 Reading player, and 3 players stood on the edge of the box. I'd like to see someone gamble from midfield now and again and try and get in the box. And
yeah, 12 of those 21 efforts were from outside the box. I believe only 3 of those went on targets. At least they're shooting, because last season, certainly, it was a case of just a lot of farting around on the edge of the box, not really getting the efforts. At least they're getting the try. And the goal itself obviously came from a shot in and around the box that the keeper spilled. We'll come on to that in a minute. But reading everything here, how Reading fell behind would seem like a mystery if Brighton were doing such a great, astute defensive effort. Dave, is there someone you can pin the blame on for the goal, or is it just a case of just a good quality move from Brighton?
I think it's a good quality move with a very large element of luck. I've mentioned before to a couple of people and put on Hobnob as well that the pass in from Bruno is ever so slightly misplaced. I say ever so slightly, it's a good couple of feet misplaced. It's meant to be into the path of Kyle, who just gets a toe into it, which, given that McShane's been drawn towards the ball, I would suggest that he's been drawn towards the ball in order to front up Kyle and make the challenge. The fact that the ball's misplaced and the toe end's taken it away from McShane has left the space in behind, and they've exploited it to the full. Yes, the guy's at the back post, but the ball across is such a good one that it takes every single defender out of the game, and all it needs is a tap-in. It's just such an inviting ball across. But at the same time, there's a huge element of luck to it as well.
I thought it was quite reminiscent of the Fulham goals that we conceded the week before as well. A couple of quick passes and the ball was in the net. Some of the, obviously, we seem to be able to cope pretty well with crosses and balls into the box in the air, but just these little couple of 1-2 passes, and they've, well, not torn us apart, but certainly opened us up, and they've scored, and Fulham done pretty much the same the week before.
Yeah, a couple of people noticed as well. Obviously, you mentioned about the Fulham game, and obviously, when one goal went in that game, two followed very, very quickly. We discussed that last week, but again, people are pointing out how frail Reading look after they concede a goal. Sam Stevenson says, "We really need to shore up after conceding or scoring. We had a really nervy 5 or 10 minutes after Brighton scored. In saying that, we collapsed after scoring at Fulham. So maybe we just need to calm down after a goal at either end." And Notorious says, "The only criticism I have to give is after half time, we seem to be a bit sleepy. Maybe we need to sort that out." Do you think there's a case of, I don't know, is it lack of leadership? Is it just momentum swings? Do you think there's a problem for Steve Clarke to sort out?
I'm not entirely sure. It's been sort of an isolated incident over the last week or so, but I thought Reading, it was nervy a little bit after they conceded, but after that, I thought they really went for the game, and I thought the second half was really enjoyable, actually.
They conceded just after the break at Rotherham as well.
They did, and they had a little bit of a nervy 4 or 5 minutes after that. Again, Rotherham, they had the bit between their teeth at that point. But Fulham, on Saturday, I think it was inevitable. If we conceded the first goal, it was inevitable that we were going to have a nervy five or ten minutes. I think it was literally just a case of getting through that. That doesn't excuse it necessarily. These are professionals after all, but after what happened at Fulham, it was always going to happen. Brighton, as I mentioned earlier, they didn't have that much in the way of attacking intent. And they didn't look, that great going forward as it was. Whereas Fulham, they had 3 or 4 top-class players at least, as soon as we conceded one, it was back to the wall. We've got to see this through. So with Saturday, it was literally a case of it was always going to happen if we conceded.
Unfortunately, Fulham have got the attacking quality of the likes of McCormack. They've got Dembele. Brighton, not quite. I mean, they've got Hamad, who's done a decent job this season, but not an awful lot of attacking prowess. In fact, the nearest they came scoring a second goal was probably through a Reading player. A nice back pass from Michael Hector that completely wrong-footed Ali Ahabzi, scrambled back and kicked it off the line. Michael Hector's been a player that's come under the microscope recently. Obviously, didn't have a very good game at Craven Cottage. He's had a few shaky moments this season. I wrote a piece up on thetarleston.com comparing him to Ferdinand in the stats, and my summation of the situation was, I'd like to see Ferdinand back in there. After Saturday's performance, is my case stronger or weaker?
I don't think it's any stronger or weaker. We certainly looked a hell of a lot more secure with Ferdinand and McShane at the back. I think that specific incident that you highlighted was as much Al Absey's fault as it was Hector's, because Al Absey's got a call for the ball. He's got a call. And there's clearly a complete lack of communication.
They did exactly the same at Portsmouth, didn't they?
They did pretty much the same at Portsmouth, yeah. And again, Al Absey has got to call for the ball. The instances are slightly different, but it all comes down to communication. And it just seems to me that Al Absey doesn't necessarily communicate as well as he possibly could do.
Yeah, again, we had this argument before, but I don't see any extra worth having either one over the other. I think they're both good players. I think whether Zerba's in there, they do a good job for you. And Hector, he makes the odd mistake, but he's still young and learning. So.
Yeah, I think the argument, John Keane wrote in the comments section that you know, it's important to protect his confidence and stuff, because if Clark drops him, that'll get damaged. But my counter argument to that was, he's not a Reading player.
Yeah, I was just going to say that he's not a Reading player anymore.
You don't need to handle him with kid gloves anymore. If he's not playing well, get him out of the team.
Yeah, that's right. If he's not playing, I will say as well, I don't know if you're going to go on to it, but I thought the substitutions on Saturday were pretty good. I thought McCleary, although he tried, huffed and puffed, he didn't really make much of an impact on the game. And I thought Saar didn't have much of an impact on the game either. I thought everything he touched came off his shin or he fell over. So
yeah,
it was much better when Blackman went through the middle.
A few people picking out Paolo Hurtado. We haven't seen too much of him so far.
We didn't see too much of him on Saturday because he seemed to stand on a wing and he hardly touched the ball.
So the energy of him and Pearson.
Well, I don't even notice his handbags, but whenever the ball come over to that side, they tend to get it back over the other side as quick as possibly could. And Hurtado wasn't giving the ball hardly at all.
Didn't necessarily notice that, but you know, I can go by what I've seen, and I've seen 20 minutes at Rotherham, half an hour at Rotherham, and 15 minutes on Saturday. Up at Rotherham, Pearson went off for Hurtado. All right, they played slightly different roles, but Hurtado looked significantly better prospect than Pearson. The little neat little tricks and flicks came off. The only thing I'd want to see from Hurtado is apparently he's got pace to burn, and a couple of times he had space in behind a fullback to do the old Jimmy Kebbe or Michael Jilt, just bunt and run, and just get at your fullback and get around, because he's apparently got that pace. Otherwise, he's very much like Ola John in many ways, in that he's all very safe.
Yeah, it was. And again, I thought McCleary had more than one or two opportunities to try and have a bunt and run as well, but he never seems to want to try. He always seems to want to come in field.
I do wonder if players, both in McCleary and Hurtado's cases, are suffering from not playing week in, week out, though, because, and it's a lot of, there's a lot of questions we'll come on to in just a second about the makeup of that attacking four unit, but it's probably been the most fluid grouping on the pitch, and I do wonder if that's having a bit of an effect. But
I don't dislike McCleary, don't get me wrong, but I just thought on the day, I just think he had very little impact on the match.
Well, the substitutes did come on and Reading did get the equaliser. Matty Vidra, first goal for Reading, one he couldn't miss from. We touched on a chance he had earlier with Reading bursting through. Was it 4-on-2? Four on three?
They didn't score.
Ball gets squared to him. And I think he's just frozen. He's caught rabbit in headlights, doesn't know whether to shoot or pass, and then he doesn't either.
I think sometimes he wants to give the ball to let someone else score a goal. He seems to be too unselfish for his own good. And I thought the goal, you say it was an easy goal to score, but he still had to follow it in, you know. He still had to chase that ball in like a good striker would. And
when you look at the strike and you look at where Vidra is in comparison to his defender, he's a good yard behind his defender.
He gets
to the ball first.
Yeah, it's what chance was easier, though? Arguably that's harder than the chance he actually had. And missed.
Yeah, again, I just thought he was too unselfish. He just put his foot for it when it came to him.
Yeah, to get into a 4-on-2 situation with a 1-on-1 and not even get a shot away is absolutely criminal.
Yeah, not good. I do like Vidra, though. I am keen to see what he can do, especially now he's back from injury. He had a decent display at Fulham. Good game on Saturday.
I thought a pair of them were good, actually, Blackman and Vidra, when they was up front together, because Blackman was a constant threat to him the whole game. I thought he was excellent again.
Yeah, Will, who wrote our match report, said Nick Blackman seemed like a man on a mission. At times, seemed like he was determined to drag Reading back into the game.
Yeah, he did. He certainly did. He was taking players on. He was running at him. He was shooting every opportunity he got. And like I said before,
shooting with his right foot as well.
If he gets his shot off on his left foot, I wouldn't want to be in goal, because when he catches it, he doesn't have to catch it hard, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. Unfortunately, the one that he really caught also flew over the bar.
Yeah, there is that one. Yeah, but Blackman absolutely superb on the day. Looked confident, and again, he tried to drag Reading back in that game, and he did. Excellent.
Yeah, well, lots of people have commented on, I said, on the makeup of this attacking unit. Hoop says, explains to me why Vidra didn't shoot on the 3-on-4-on-1 counter in the second half. I think we covered that. Jimmy Coulson, will we score more goals playing 4-4-2 with Vidra and Blackman up top? Does it offer us pace in behind? Matt Castle, do you think we need more structure in attack? Saar is suffering from the free-rotating front three attack. And Jeff Hallett, we work best when Saar stays central and Blackman is inside forward rather than the other way round. Thoughts? So how do you see this attacking unit? Lots of talk about, do we play 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1? What's your ideal four, or is it a mix and match?
Well, the ideal four, Blackman's got to be in there at the moment, Saar and Vidra, and anyone from the others, really.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I can see why it could be beneficial to have players interchanging with each other. I mean, basically, it completely, or the theory behind it is to completely screw up a defensive organisation for the opposition. But at the same time, you do need that structure, because all the times that Saar had the ball, particularly in the first half, he had plenty of touches out on the left wing. But you know, he's not a left winger. You know, Sarr really needs to be the one who's getting into the box and getting onto the end of the crosses, which is possibly where the whole Gareth McCleary argument comes into it, with not getting at the fullback, because Sarr was always in support. There wasn't anybody else in the box when it should be Orlando Sarr in there. At least Orlando Sarr.
Yeah, and one of the midfielders as well. Like I said, there was far too many players too far back from being near anywhere near the box. When the cross was coming in, it was one player against five.
Five or 6 yards further forward so they can attack the ball, and they're all outside the box.
Yeah, yeah. Like with Sidwell used to do, you know, gamble, run into the box.
Danny Williams, first minute against Middlesbrough.
Yep.
Perfect example.
Even when someone's got the ball midfield, there's far too many players in front of him that were static. Well, no one was giving them a run in behind. No one was gambling and just running, you know, and think, oh, I can pick you out now. It was too much, or pretty football, let's look at each other. No one was gambling and making that run in behind or running into the box to try and get on the end of a cross.
Okay, well, a point keeps us seventh in the table. Just before we move on then, chaps, thoughts on Brighton? Because obviously they're the only team left in the Football League that are unbeaten. Still, obviously, remain at the top of the table. And we've talked in various episodes about we're not really sure how this Brighton team is top of the table. Did they answer questions like that for you, Westy?
No, I thought they were steady. They looked organised. Again, they had a goal in them. They got one, so we can't argue with that. But I thought, over the other teams I've seen, especially I thought, again, Middlesbrough, a very similar sort of team, well organised, play nice football, but don't look like world beaters. And I think Brighton probably fall into that category.
Do you think they'll be top two contender season?
They might well be. Like I say, if they keep going the way they are, it'd be hard to argue against it.
Yeah, it all depends on what they do in January. From the sounds coming out of Brighton, are that if they are there or thereabouts in January, then Tony Bloom's going to open the purse strings. But at this moment in time, they didn't show anything to suggest that they would be able to maintain a consistent promotion charge. Yeah. They don't offer enough for an attack, and at times they looked a bit vulnerable, even though they did have very good defensive organisation.
Yeah, we could have had a few goals against them.
Asked a question in the intro then about should we reevaluate our promotion aspirations. Obviously, it is three games that are win now. They've not, you know, lost to Fulham, drawn at Rotherham, and drawn at home to Brighton. Is this still a team that should be fighting for a top two spot, or is this looking more like a team that's probably going to end up around the playoffs?
Well, we are. We're still fighting for a top two spot. We're only 5 points off it, I believe.
But as in quality-wise, do you think this is a team that looks top two?
Yeah. I still haven't seen anyone better than Reading.
No, exactly. I mean, every single team we've deserved to take something off.
Just a case of getting the results then, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just a blip in the season. You get them in the Championship, and all teams are having, don't matter if you're top or bottom. There's always a little run where you struggle for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. Even in 05-06, in March, we only won one out of three. One out of four, sorry. Three draws.
Harrowing times.
The way you look at it is we've had two away games and we've played against the team's top, and we've only lost one.
Yeah, going to be a big game on Tuesday, but we'll come on to that a little bit later. In the meantime, let's just move on to a couple of news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, we start off News Bites with a bit of a serious story here. Reading's on loan midfielder Lucas Pearson, who's on loan for the season from Chelsea. There's an arrest warrant been served for him in the Toronto region in Canada on suspicion of a sexual assault that happened during the Pan Am Games earlier this summer. At the moment, the club hasn't commented officially, neither have Chelsea. The only comment we've had from it on the record, Charles Watts asked Steve Clarke about the situation on Saturday, asking whether Pearson was dropped from the starting lineup because of it. Clarke said it had nothing to do with that. He has spoken to him about the situation, but the team selection was not affected by it. It was purely for footballing reasons. Obviously, a story we'll follow on thetarlhurstend.com, so just keep an eye out on there, and obviously get reading.co.uk as well for that. Moving on, bad news as well on the injury front. Aaron Tischbowler looks like he's going to be out into the new year with an ankle injury. Obviously, really not good timing given that Stephen Quinn and Hal Robson-Cannou also look like they're out to the new year. Westy, those injuries just slowly starting to mount up now. Do you think there's a little bit of a problem in the centre of the park?
Again, we're lucky that we've got such a good squad at the moment, because these injuries could have hurt us badly, I think. But as it stands, I think we're just about still all right. But you don't want another one going, do you? Because then you will be struggling. But I feel sorry for Tischbowler, because I think he's been excellent whenever he's played this year. And he's just sort of getting ahead of steam. He's starting a few games. He always looks steady whenever he plays, and to put him out till New Year's is a shame for him.
Do you think those three injuries combined are going to hurt Reading?
At this moment, no. I think if we lost Danny Williams, then yes, we would do, in combination with those three, because Williams is the only recognised player who can fill that sort of defensive role. Ollie Norwood, while he sits back in a similar position, offers, you know, plays a completely different type of midfield role. If we lost him, then we'd be looking at someone like Alex Fernandez to step up to the plate and hopefully play just as well. But if we lost Williams, I think we would be in pretty serious trouble.
Yeah, we're so lucky this year. We've got such a lot of good midfielders, which, again, if we'd had two injuries last year in midfield, we'd have been struggling.
Yeah, I think this international break's coming up at a good time as well. They've obviously got the Huddersfield game on Tuesday and then a trip to Cardiff, and they've got a bit of time off to recuperate. Such good players. I still think Quinn is the biggest miss of those three. Really liked what he brought to the team and solidity as well. And I think some of these errors and moments of madness are creeping in because you haven't got an experienced player like that in the team. So I'm hoping I'm wrong anyway and they can cope without it. But I'm slightly concerned about the treatment room. But anyway, that's just about it for News Bites. We'll move on now to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. Unfortunately, Halloween's been and gone, so there'll be no spooky topics this week.
Yeah.
I know, gutted. Don't worry, Christmas is just around the corner. Mm. Get the themed Pub Chats back. But Dave, you'll bring us Pub Chat this week.
Yeah, a bit of discussion was had at a couple of people on match day, on Saturday, around Jordan Obita and the fact that Taylor had been drafted in to replace him directly. And just wondering, really, well, the opinions on the fellow panellists, who what makes a good fullback.
This is a tricky one, because in more recent times, so in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a lot more attacking emphasis placed on a fullback.
Yeah, well, what you could do then, you could do like former Royals, that if you could put into one player who were fullbacks, what would you put of their qualities? For example, Shorey's ability on the ball and crossing, and Murty's endeavour. You know what I mean? That sort of thing.
Chris Armstrong's ability just to get up and down and be steady.
Steady
Eddie.
Same with
Andy Griffin.
In fact,
type.
Taylor reminded me a little bit of Chris Armstrong. Very steady Eddie. You know, you could rely on him.
Yeah, my dad said he was a left fullback version of Andy Griffin.
Yeah, well, okay. Even that's steady Eddie, I suppose. Although, it's nearer the end of his Reading career, it's a bit dodgy, but other than that.
It was Griffin for England at one stage.
Yes. Yeah, 2010. I think you need a bit of everything from a fullback now. What people seem to remember recently is the whole Jamie Carragher slating of Gary Neville on Monday Night Football one night, wasn't it? You know, fullbacks, it's an extremely specialist position now, certainly turning into it. I mean, you've got to have an engine like Chris Gunter's got, and you've got to be prepared to get up and down and hug that touch line, offer support to an attack. You've got to be able to whip in a cross. But at the same time, you've also got to be able to defend, particularly up against skillful, nippy wingers. You've got to be able to get a foot in at the right time. You've got a position that's got to be absolutely spot on. There's so much that you've got to be as a fullback that it's almost turning into the most specialist. It probably is the most specialist outfield player that you'd need.
You say that, but then you look at someone like an Ian Hart, who obviously, when he came to Reading, was never blessed with pace.
No.
He did have that position sense, though, and he could sort of operate from deep. He was Championship Fullback of the Year two times in a row, obviously.
Yeah, but
isn't brilliant.
I was going to say, that's a little bit dodgy, because that's probably the only one anyone knew, Ian Hart, because he's quite a well-known fullback.
But the fact that he scored most weeks.
Yeah. He had a good magic wand on left foot, didn't he? And he had a great free kick, and the amount of goals he scored from that position was unreal.
Played in two top, one promotion with Bournemouth, one promotion with Reading, and got a Reading team to a playoff final as well.
I still think, arguably, the best fullback I've ever seen at Reading was Shorey, just because I've never seen a player play left-back and run a match. And I'll see him run more than one or two games, especially that West Ham game at home when he absolutely ran him ragged and he was playing left back. So, again, but what you could say is, what didn't he have that you would put in your dream right back, left back? I mean, you're talking about Gunter there. Now, Gunter's got endeavour, he gets up and down, but quality-wise, on the ball, I think he lacks a lot. You know, his crossing's dreadful 9 times out of 10. He's not the best footballer, but what he has got is an engine. He can get up and down.
But so that's probably the reason he's at Reading, isn't it?
That keeps
it?
You
very,
from the top
very
level,
quick
yeah.
as well. It gets him out of trouble quite a bit. Yeah. If you've got a fullback who is particularly quick, then they do have that ability to get out of trouble.
Sure,
Carlos was a prime case in point, where he wasn't exactly a great defender, but his pace just got him out of trouble so many times.
Whereas Shorey wasn't particularly quick, was he? He was just a good footballer.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan Obita is kind of similar, because I don't think Jordan Obita's positioning sense is brilliant. I mean, I've brought up on this show several times this year, I think he's been out of position and caught ball watching a couple of times for goals at Reading have conceded this year. But he has got the pace and the agility that does get him out of trouble a bit. He's got, can use both of his feet, and that, you know, it gets him out of a jam. But still, defensively, I don't look at Jordan Obita and go, that's a great left back. I think there's a player who's growing into a left back, and he's doing the best job he can.
Yeah, he could be a decent left back. I mean, he could be a lower Premier League left back, but you can't see him pushing much harder than that. Yeah.
I think a year ago we were all looking at, I certainly was looking at him and being a, you know, certainly a mid-table Premier League fullback. I think fullback is his best position. Over the last year, though, he has somewhat tailed off quite a bit. Having said that, you know, you get him one on one up against a winger. I'd back a beater to come out on top of that sort of 7 times out of 10. And certainly, if there's a cross, I'd back him to block it.
I think sometimes what you forget is that obviously he was never a left back going out. I mean, he could play in multiple positions. It was only out of sort of emergency that Nigel Adkins employed him there.
Yeah,
and I wonder, and I've always wondered whether a beater himself sees himself as a left back, and I think that's important for your mentality, because if you know I'm a left back, this is what I'm doing, and you're working all hours of the day to improve at that position, whereas if in the back of your head you've got kind of hoping I get pushed further forward at some stage, I'm just going to do this job.
Yeah, I just don't think he's got that little bit extra you're going to need to play right midfield or left midfield, sorry, and left wing. I don't think he's got that trick, that extra bit of pace to a bit of strength.
Do you think he needs to fail first? Because obviously, you look at another fullback that Redden have had in the past, Graham Murty. Obviously, he played first half of his career as a winger and only moved back sort of his mid-20s after, again, it was...
After an injury, wasn't it?
It was after injury, yeah. And I think it was a scenario where Redden didn't have a lot of options. Yeah. He got employed out there. Was it Pards played him there?
Pardew played him there, yep.
So I don't know whether Obita needs to almost... I'd say that it sounds harsh. I don't know, almost know whether he needs to fail as a left winger to truly accept.
The thing is, he must... I mean, he is a good footballer, but they tried to play him in midfield as well, didn't they, Beater? Because he was half decent on the ball. That failed, really.
And then, in the middle of the park. Yeah, totally,
and then he moved back to left back again. So I think it is his position. I think, again, if he doesn't want to play there, then I can't see him getting employed at left wing anywhere that's better than Reading, let's put it that way.
No. The only other thing I say about fullbacks is the whole... After the last couple of years at Reading, I never want to see a right footer back at left back.
No.
The Stephen Kelly, Sean Cummings experiments.
No,
just awful.
Didn't really work, did they? So what would you say then? If you had to pick a certain amount of players from Reading.
All right. We'd certainly have Shorey. Well, we have Ian Hart's wander a left foot. We'd have Shorey's general all round positional ability. We'd have Chris Armstrong for his engine. We'd have Dylan Kerr for his personality. who else did we mention?
I would have
Murty.
Murty's in
leadership.
Yeah, I'm going down a left back wing there, aren't I? Forrester. I always forget the right wing.
Or this is a bit left field because I've probably only played there a couple of times for us left back. I think I'd have to have Michael Jukes's pace.
Well, he played sort of left wing back, didn't he?
He did the Wolves, so a long time play left back, didn't he? But definitely he was quick as lightning, that one.
What about, okay, we'll be amiss without focusing on the negative here, because that's what we love to do.
What wouldn't we have?
What wouldn't we have? Some of the worst fullbacks you've seen?
Andy Hughes' crossing. It was particularly poor.
Everything to do with Martin Booty.
Because he did play left back for a few times, didn't he? And a couple.
But the player it always baffled me how he ever ended up at fullback was Greg Alford. I mean, he was so big. Oh. He never looked like a right back or a left back, did he? He looked more like a centre back.
He was touted as one of these players that, he can play anywhere, he's great.
He couldn't really, could he?
No.
I think he's just a fill-in everywhere because he wasn't good anywhere.
Let's just be happy that we made a profit out of him.
Yeah,
in the end.
How?
Yeah. In the end.
God,
I think Sean Cummings at West Brom in 2009 was the absolute nadir, the low nadir, if there is such a thing, of fullback performances. He was absolutely ripped a new one by Jerome Thomas.
I was going to say, his neighbours dress up as Jerome Thomas to scare him every Halloween.
Knock on his door. But yeah, so that's what we're saying. I reckon you got to have them players. But again, to have a player that had all that ability, they wouldn't play for Reading, would they? We know that anyway. So
who else do we have? We have Martin Booty, wasn't exactly superb.
Steve Swales.
Boom, boom, boom.
Bless him.
Maybe
he's a Swales. Uray Travner from more recent times.
I don't think anyone really remembers him.
Always loved when Jem Carrachan used to go to right back. Never did anything.
No. Well, it's the same performance put in midfield. He's run around and put in a tackle.
Finally got a start for Galatasaray on it the other night.
Did he?
To Jem, yeah.
Good luck to him.
Yeah, we had a bit of a sort of... But we've been kind of lucky, I think, in fullbacks over the years. Obviously, you know, we've rattled off those names. And that's just in the last sort of 10 years most of those names have come up.
All right, and okay, in world football, who's the best left or right back you've ever seen, do you think?
Paolo Maldini.
I loved what Neville did for United.
Yeah, I thought Paolo.
Gary, not Phil.
Yeah. If you're a Liverpool fan, you probably love a lot of Phil done for you. I think you can't argue either two of them players. They're both top level, weren't they? I mean, Maldini, I think he's still playing now and he must be about 50.
No, I think he's finally finally out of the boots. Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised, but yeah. I think he's finally gone, yeah. I loved Carlos, but I think it's more just for that goal in Le Tournoi.
Yeah, that was what a strike that was.
Yeah, and he's lived off that, hasn't he? And let's face it, he must have taken about 300 free kicks from then on and probably only got about two on target.
You only have to do it once.
Exactly. All people remember. Right, well, if you've got thoughts on your ideal right or left back and the qualities they need to possess or don't or shouldn't possess, couldn't go amiss without just saying, if you want examples of how not to be a fullback, Wembley 2011, just all of it in that game, especially Andy Griffin. Anyway, sorry, if you have got those thoughts, tweet us, email or Facebook us in and you'll hear some of those contact details right now.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
Well, obviously we joke that we always get a full mailbag when Reading lose and it's a bit thinner when we win. This one is quite very thin because of the draw. Obviously, no one's got any feelings either way.
No, that's right. It's very subdued.
Yeah, we rattled off a fair few in the recap, to be fair. So thank you for those who have got in touch to at the Tarleston on Twitter, tarleston@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetarleston. So appreciation to those of you who've all read out. We've got three to get through now. Start with an email from Jack Killick. Thanks again for emailing in, Jack. He says, was extremely impressed with Taylor on Saturday. Had very little cover from attacking players, yet put in a cracking performance. Could imagine a beater would have struggled if he played. However, I agree what was said on BBC Barks. Use a beater against Leicester teams so he can get forward and play Taylor when we need to keep it tight at the back. Obviously, Blackman was the star man. Need to desperately give him a new contract, otherwise Reading may struggle to keep hold of him come January, yet alone the end of the season. On a positive note, we should definitely beat Huddersfield. Oh, hashtag dear. You ours.
It's a mistake, that last bit.
Yeah.
Should,
yeah.
But not. I wouldn't guarantee it.
Well, depends on how the prediction league goes in a minute.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts then?
There's something to be said for what BBC Radio Berkshire have said. I mean, I didn't hear it myself because I'm obviously walking home. You can imagine Obita would maybe have struggled because he likes to get forward a lot more. He offers a lot more in attack than Taylor. I wouldn't necessarily agree. I can see why he said that. You know, with Brighton sat back so much, I mean, it would have given Mabita a bit of license to at least, you know, maybe stay forward 10 or 15 yards. But I can see why you know, they'd be looking at chopping and changing. But unfortunately, as I say, you, if one player nails down a position, you can't then just chop and change.
Well, Westy, what about the contract talk then? Is this a case of Reading need to literally hand Nick Blackman a massive sack full of money and say, please sign this new contract, or do they play the waiting game?
Well, they're going to have to hand him a sack full of money because, like I said last week, that it's going to cost you to replace a player that's scoring goals in the Championship, a player at a level he is, it's going to cost you 8 to 10 million in today's market. So it's worth paying him a lot of money just to keep him here because you can't replace him and you ain't going to replace him.
I noticed Charlie Austin came out last week and said that I'm not leaving QPR in January.
He's leaving.
But I am leaving in the summer.
Yeah.
Now, Nick Blackman comes to you and hypothetically says that, but you get a big bid from one of these relegation threatened sides, I don't know, Sunderland, suddenly throws you 4 or 5 million. Do you take it or do you let him play out the season?
Well, it's a difficult one. I think I wouldn't take it. I think if he can get in the Premier this year, it's worth far more than 3 or 4 million. So unless you're going to replace him, which you won't, what's the point of getting rid of him?
I think there's an argument for taking it and laying down a challenge for the rest of the players. Got enough attacking intent in that side, so
and obviously,
particularly if he now doesn't score particularly many at the rate that he was, you know, if he ends up at, like, you know, sort of maybe 12 or 13 goals, not even that, between now and January, then you're thinking, you know, it's a incredible streak that he's had, but, you know, it's more goals than he's had in the previous two and a half years.
I think there will be teams testing Reading though.
I think they will, yeah.
In January.
I think they'd be stupid not to, knowing he's not under contract at the end of the season.
He's yet to truly prove himself, as far as I'm concerned, Blackman. He's doing it. He's proving a lot of people wrong. And don't get me wrong, his performances this season have been absolutely superb. But, you know, at the same time...
It is such a gamble to try... Because, like you say, they'd have to give him such a lot of money now with the form he's in to get him to sign that deal.
Yeah, he's in a brilliant negotiating position at the moment. And he knows it.
I do not envy Messrs. Hammond.
It's one of those things that if you took some money for him and we didn't get promoted, everyone would say, "Wow, we shouldn't have sold Blackman." And if you keep him here and you don't get promoted, they say, "Well, we should have sold Blackman." It's one of those catch 22s, really.
My gut instinct is to say you keep him and you just see how he does.
I think you keep him because 3 or 4 million. What is it in today's market? It's not a great deal of money, is it?
Yeah, at the moment.
He'll get you one season of Vidra.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at the moment he's an absolute shoo-in in the starting lineup. But at the same time, as I say, I just come back to the previous point. He's yet to truly prove himself over a consistent and elongated period of time.
Yeah, but it was nice to see, especially this week. It's nice to see him try and take a game to the opposition. We haven't seen that from him since he's been here.
Yep. Absolutely. And you can vote for Nick Blackman. He's on the shortlist for the Tarlow Stand Player of the Month for October. Judging by the way the voting has gone so far, I think he's taken about 80% of the vote. So it looks like he's going to complete the hat-trick of August, September, October.
Has anyone ever done that before, 3 in a row?
I have a feeling Pogrebniak did in rather lacklustre circumstances.
Yeah, I think it's because there wasn't too much up against
them. Yeah, it was the winter where Adkins very nearly got the boot.
Right.
And I think he won it in like November, December and January.
Yeah, I think he only scores in January or there or whatever about.
Yeah, so it would still be a fairly unique feat anyway. Ollie Allen, our assistant editor here at the Tyler Centre, he says, any other Reading bromances you can think of apart from Chris Gunter and Gareth McCleary? What are the two players used to really get on?
Well, when I was younger, there was a player called Dean Horrocks and Trevor Cena. They used to have a bit of a bromance. A lot of people won't remember him, but I think Horrocks must have set up about 75% of seniors' goals. So they were good together.
Just by the way he talks to me through Berkshire, I assume Adie Williams had a bromance just about everybody. Seems to really get on with everyone.
I can think of a few. Kerr and Jilks down the left wing. You had Curran and Butler up front. Forster and Hughes.
I thought you'd say Cassidy then. I thought, probably not.
Probably not.
No, probably not. Probably not.
Probably not. You've got, you know, more recently you've had Murty and Little, Shorey and Convey, Sidwell and Harper, Kitson and Doyle, Son Cohen and Gamarson, Marcus Hanneman.
Noel and Stephen Hunt.
Tear it up now. Tear it up.
Yeah, plenty of them.
There's been a few. Royce Harper and Sidwell, we put that one down?
Harper, did I say that?
I never really got the feeling that they had a massive bromance going on. But then it was right before social media really took off.
Yeah, but they worked well together, didn't they? You know, Harper did a bit of
They did work. Well. There was a good partnership, but it's not good, really a bromance, is it?
Okay.
Yeah. If only we'd had a social media 10 years ago. Could have been seeing who gets up to what in Utopia.
I thought we knew what was
probably getting. probably wouldn't be able to be broadcast on this show.
Probably not.
But even so,
the good
if you've got any bromance suggestions at Tyler Stend. And Ian Wilson, the only, to my knowledge, Leicester fan that regularly listens to this show.
Well, there's a challenge to the Leicester City fans.
Yeah, if you're out there. He says, in that Leicester City have Kasabian's Fire as its goal music, what would your ideal Reading goal music be?
Ditch it completely. Spontaneous celebration.
Not a fan of Tom Hark? Or Chase the Sun?
Can't we have the official Reading FC anthem nowadays? Can't we have that come on when we score?
Sing for the Roar.
Sing for the Royals, where it's called, yeah.
I've noticed that they do play like Spandau Ballet, Sarr scores, or the Nick Blackman song, which whose title escapes me.
Yeah, it's gone a bit American, isn't it, with our DJ friend as well.
DJ Mega Party.
DJ Mega Party.
He's keen.
They've sort of jazzed it up, American it up a bit, aren't they?
I'm not a massive fan of goal music, but I didn't mind Tom Hark. But I think if you did going to do something, just stick with it. I don't like this chopping and changing.
No, stick with the same thing. But I don't mind goal music, but what I don't like is when you've scored a couple and then you're getting beat 3-2 and then the away fans do it ironically. That's the only thing that upsets me.
Away fans just upset me anyway.
Ban them all.
Yep.
Ban them all.
Do what Luton did.
Ban them all.
The Luton approach.
Ban them all. Just close the south stand. Just close it. We're done. Right. Thank you very much, as I said, for all of your feedback. And get us at the Tyler Stand on Twitter. TheTylerStand@gmail.com is our email address, and facebook.com/TheTylerStand. If you use the hashtag TTE podcast, there's a much better chance that I'll pick up on it. But if you have tweeted in and I've missed it, accept my sincere apologies and nudge me on Twitter and I'll do my best to reply anyway. In the meantime, two more championship games to preview. In any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Well then, guys, any other business time? I said two championship games to preview, starting with the visit of Huddersfield tomorrow night as we record this on Monday. Huddersfield arrive at the Bernesky Stadium, 16th in the championship. They've won just three games this season and only one of seven on the road. Away from home, they've scored only four goals all season and have conceded 11. So, nailed on Huddersfield win. Yeah?
Yeah, it's the sort of stats that Reading normally tend to unsettle, shall we say.
We are streak busters.
Yeah. Is Naki Will still there? He tends to score against us, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's been coming off the bench recently.
He's got a nasty habit. Ismail Miller. Getting a goal, hasn't he?
Yeah. He scored once against us.
Has he?
Yeah. Oh,
he's run us ragged a few times.
Did he score in that draw in the end of 13-14?
He scored here, didn't he?
Yeah. Just after we'd missed out on signing him, I think.
Unless he scored in the 3-0 defeat last season as well. Not sure.
I think he's got a bit of scoring against Fred, my memory.
Could have done. We lost 2-1 at the Bernesky, didn't we, early last season?
We did, yeah. He didn't score in that, though.
No. Huddersfield come, they've lost the last two games, 2-1 against Derby and Burnley. The only place they've won this season has been at Charlton. So, to be fair, we said this against Rotherham, though. This is a game that Reading, especially after not winning the last three, they surely got to win this.
It's one of those games that Reading need to score in the first 20 minutes so we don't have to sit there watching Huddersfield sit in and try and keep us at bay.
The Terriers fan we spoke to, that you'll see on the View from the Town End Tuesday morning, has gone for a 3-0 Reading win.
Yeah.
So they're not particularly confident coming in.
No, I'm not surprised. I've seen them a couple of times this season, albeit on TV, and they struggled, really struggled at home to a 1-0 draw against a somewhat very average Forest side this season, earlier this season. They just look desperately short of quality. They're fairly solid. They're reasonably well organised, but there's no outstanding quality to them. Yeah,
They've got a fair few solid championship names there, like Hudson in defence, Harry Bunn. Obviously, I think he made his sensational appearance on the scene against Reading last season. That 2-1,
yeah,
didn't he?
He scored, for the first time in about 2 years. I think it was.
Dean Whitehead, obviously been there and done it.
Yeah, Mustafa Carriol.
Yeah, Jamie Patterson as well.
If we're going to need to be careful of anybody, then obviously Naki Wells coming off the bench. Ismail Miller just flat has to deceive big time, so he's nailed on to score twice. Emma Hughes, he's got one hell of a punch outside of the box, with a great long shot to him. Otherwise, can't really see much there, to be honest with you, with all due respect to him.
No, again, they're just an average championship side, but they will sit in, and Reading need to start fast and get that early goal, and then they should walk over him.
And as we saw against Charlton last time, they're still lacking that conviction at killing sides off.
They've got to start quick. They've got to go with the impetus to get a goal early. Really go at them first 10, 15 minutes, rather than pitter-patter about and trying to play around them.
And they've blown leads the last two times they've had them, which is something that hadn't really characterised Reading teams in the past, but blowing leads against Rotherham and Fulham, and then obviously having to come from behind against Brighton as well. Like you said, they just need that a cushion, because as soon as Reading go 2-0 up, this game's dead.
Yeah.
Even if they go 1-0 up, I suspect the game's dead.
Yep.
To get that first goal is going to be crucial. Then it's a trip down the M4 to Cardiff. A much tougher proposition this. Hadn't realised what a nice run Cardiff had been on. They're unbeaten in the last six. They play Leeds away again on Tuesday night. So that run could come to an end. Hopefully comes to an end there. But they've only been beaten once at home all season. That was against Hull back in September. They've got a really tight few games. They've only scored twice in the last five, but they've not conceded a goal in any of the last four games. And their total home record is in seven games, they've scored eight and conceded four. So I can't see this being a very open and expansive game, which, again, doesn't really tend to suit Reading.
No, and they've got some good players as well, Cardiff, and they've sort of underachieved for the last couple of seasons. So you'd expect them to be difficult to beat at home, and it'd be a tough game for Reading, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just looking at that lineup from the last game. There's a lot of players in there that they had when they got promoted under Mackay. They're a lot more conservative. I mean, they were conservative under Mackay at the best of times. But yeah, I mean, their goals for and their goals against record, I mean, it seems that they're quite happy to play a similar way to Brighton in many ways. Keep it tight and nick one. But say you look at the I mean, it's packed with championship quality at least. With was it David Marshall? I mean, Sean Morrison, who we know very well. Matt Connolly, who we also know very well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most overrated fullbacks in the league, and Fabio da Silva. just Mr. Headless. Anybody who thinks Jem Carrichan ran around a lot, just watch Fabio and you just think, Jesus.
Well, he came off after half an hour in their last game, so hopefully, well, actually, no. I was going to say hopefully he's not fit. Hopefully he's fit.
They got Peltier on the other wing, who's the other flank, who I think is a very underrated fullback. Aaron Gunnarsson, Peter Whittingham.
Always been a fan of Gunnarsson.
Shola Ameobi.
Surely you've got someone you can hit. He's good in the air, isn't he, Shola Ameobi?
Yeah, exactly.
Not the most mobile anymore, but certainly decent in the
air. You can see
Craig, no one coming off the bench.
Yeah, you can see why they struggled to score goals, though, looking at their attacking options. I know Reading were linked to Mason, Alex Revel as well. Just not a lot of... It's not a lot of threat. I say that, and Sammy Ameobi is going to smash home a hat trick. But yeah, this is just going to be a tight one. And again, I think that is definitely the type of game where the first goal is unbelievably crucial.
Yeah, I might do my Sean Morrison first goal in
that. Of course, it's Sammy Ameobi, isn't it? Not Shola.
Yeah, Sammy.
Shola's gone to Bolton, isn't he?
He has. He's joined the old. They've got a strict no under 35s attacking policy.
Up front, especially. Yeah.
Hence
why they're at the bottom of the league.
Yeah, a tough team, and one S Moore on the bench as well. So if our Stuart gets on the bench, he'll be facing his brother, Simon, on the opposite kind of bench. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Battle of the bench goalkeepers. It's going to be tough. And again, this is another real test of their promotion aspirations, because Cardiff, I said, ninth in the league now. You know, I think they'll go above Reading if they beat them. Obviously, it depends what happens against Huddersfield and Leeds, respectively. But
good record at Cardiff, though, haven't they, Reading, in recent years?
Yeah, obviously the playoff victory. I seem to remember a draw up there, a couple of draws, a Matthew Monse draw, and then Craig Bellamy equalising and then throwing a bottle at Simon Church.
Yeah, I'm getting no comeuppance for it. Yeah.
No.
Cheers, Craig.
So they've done pretty well there, but a real tough game. But if they get 6 points again from this week, they've had a very good week.
FA Cup win there last season as well.
I just realised that's the most obvious thing I could possibly say.
They've had a bloody good week. Yeah.
If they win two games, they've had a good week. But we said this before, the last couple of away games against Fulham and Rotherham. What's a good week for that? Would you be happy with four points? Is that a minimum for you?
Win at home, draw away?
Yeah, I think 4 points is a minimum for me. You expect Reading to win at home against Huddersfield, but they're the sort of games Reading end up losing and probably beat Cardiff. But again, it hasn't happened so much this year where we've struggled to beat the bottom sides. I think Cardiff away is always going to be tricky, but I don't see anything that should frighten Red in there.
Yeah, and Buxraw brings up in the further reading column again this week on thetalisman.com that Reading have raised their game against the best sides. Mm. It's, you know, they've beaten Burnley, they've beaten Middlesbrough. It's only really Derby. And that was through a moment of madness from Orlando Sarr.
I think it suits Reading playing the better sides, because the better sides tend to come out of them a bit more than maybe your Huddersfields and your Charltons.
Yeah, well, speaking of results and getting the right ones, one person here had a good week in the prediction league. I predicted a 1-1 draw against Brighton, as did one Charles Watts, to shake up the prediction league standings. Charles is now outright at the top on 13. I'm moved into second on 11. Leaving behind Johnny Williams in third on 10. Two of you unfortunately didn't get this right. Westy, you went for a 1-0 Reading win, and Dave, you went for a 3-1 Reading win. Leaving, you're on 3 points, Westy, and Dave, you are still on one.
Although I did start 10 games into the season.
And he's right up behind me already.
There's one correct result away. Well, as you two are at the tail end of the table, Dave, give you the prerogative of going first.
Huddersfield, do you know what? Yeah, 3-0.
3-0.
Yeah.
Reading.
I'll go with the Huddersfield fan.
Okay, we'll come back on to the Cardiff game then. Westy for Huddersfield?
2-0 Reading.
2-0. I'm going to go for a much more conservative, scrappy 1-0 win. Just to raise my last prediction there. I'm still keeping the points. Then on to Cardiff. Westy, I'll start with you this time.
I'm going to go 2-1 Reading.
2-1, I will say...
I can never back against them, that's why I never win it.
Feel that, and you're predicting 6-0s.
Yeah, that was a little bit random.
Was a little bit strong. I will go against, at Cardiff, I'm going to be the negative person and say 2-1 to the home side. Dave?
1-1.
Go for a 1-1.
Jackpot draw.
Jackpot draw. And I have got a prediction here from Mr. Johnny Williams. He is all right. He's just working for the next few weeks. He's not been kicked off the show yet.
Yet.
He's gone for a 4-0 against Huddersfield. So there you go. He's not giving me his Cardiff result prediction yet.
But it's all different. That's good.
Yeah. And I'll get Charles's thoughts next few days. Just a quick apology as well. There was no podcast extra this week. Just one of those things. I was working, Charles was working. Couldn't get a time to rendezvous, but hopefully we'll be back with that show on Friday. In the meantime, I said the Tyler's Den Player of the Month vote is open, so you can go there. And also a big thank you to everyone who did give us your support in the Football Blogging Awards final voting. It is now closed. We will find out our fate. I seem to remember it's November the 18th up in Manchester. So, fingers crossed, we bring back the glory, or at least put in an unprofessional joke of a performance.
Yeah, at least get a vote would be nice, wouldn't it? Just anything, just a bit of recognition for you guys.
Yeah, very much so. Well, it's for all of us.
That's for all of us.
All of us.
You put in the hard work nowadays. I don't bother so much.
That's about with me for an hour. That's hard work in itself.
That is a pleasure.
Right, well, thank you very much, gents, for joining me. As I said, we'll be back next week again, probably likely on Monday, and that'll be the last show for a couple of weeks, because then it's back on international duty.
Boom.
For one of the more pointless international windows of the year.
Mm.
But fear not, I said, we'll be back to recap these two games. In the meantime, thanks for downloading. Hello to thetylersen.com for plenty more insight and analysis. In the meantime, come on, you are. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.